If you've been told to pull your socks up recently, then make sure it's a pair of RCR socks. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Up Your Brave show on Reality Check Radio. I am your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh. And next up, I've got my beautiful friend, Sandy Leo, who is a returning guest. We had her on in 2023 talking about the elderly. And this is a topic I am extra passionate about because many of my listeners know I started working with the elderly during the week, twice a week. I spend time with them and I love it so much. And I'm so thrilled to have Sandy back talking today about elderly care, thrive or survive. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Hello, Natalie. Lovely to be here.
So good to have you back. And we had such a positive response to your first interview. So for those of you that may or may not have caught the first interview, or maybe you don't know Sandy, Sandy Leo is a dedicated healthcare professional, a certified Czech professional of over 35 years, with a profound background committed to transforming clients of all ages, mentally, physically, and nutritionally, together with the way the elderly care is approached. She has a boutique business in Albany, serving clients both in New Zealand and overseas via Zoom, and a passion for challenging the conventional Western medical model of elder care, Sandy advocates for holistic healthcare and natural solutions. Her approach emphasizes enhancing the mind and body to thrive rather than merely medicating symptoms. Sandy works one-to-one with clients in rest homes and private residences, bringing her philosophy to life. Her personalized care has enabled many to enjoy a fulfilling life, including a remarkable 92-year-old client who continues to thrive physically and mentally under her guidance. She is the proud mother of Moses Leo, who has overcome injuries to represent New Zealand in the All Black Sevens at the Olympics. Amazing. Sandy also cherishes her role as a grandmother to seven wonderful grandchildren. Her professional and personal experiences fuel her dedication to providing compassionate, effective care for all of her clients to thrive and not just survive. I love this topic so much because particularly when I go to my job on Tuesday or Thursday, I have this one guy who comes in and we have this little joke because I usually say, you know, how are you going today? And he goes, oh, I'm surviving. Like, and I challenge him. I said, you know, every day you got to give me a different word, but not surviving. And so, yeah. So Sandy, what is thriving? Like, what does that look like in terms of the elderly?
Thriving is that desire still to get out of bed and to live your day and have purpose and gratitude instead of, uh-oh, here we go again, the pills come in, nothing works in the body, you don't feel good, the whole day is a struggle. You want to see the elderly still smiling, wanting to be part of their day, like excited, even if their day doesn't have too much in it, but everything is still like sunny and colorful for them instead of gray and black for them. You know, there's a huge difference. And I personally wouldn't want to live in a gray and black garden. I want a bit of color. And a lot of them don't have color.
What, in terms of a lot of them, I don't know if you have any statistics, but generally, how often do you see, you know, I don't know if you want to give me a percentage or what, but how often do you see people that are living like that, that really are thriving, elderly people that are thriving, and not just the gray and black and white lifestyle?
Well, unfortunately, because they come from that age of where go to the doctor if you're sick, unless they have got children or they have learned that there are alternative ways to get through aging, I would hate to put a figure on it. I would say we'd be as limited as 20% of thriving. Mm. What I see, and they aren't the ones that are in rest homes. They're the ones that are still coping at home with beautiful children taking roster systems of delivering food or taking them shopping. Like my 92-year-old, he still drives, but his children have him on a curfew, what time he's going to be home, when he's going to ring. And like, so it's allowing them to still feel like they're not a child. They're an adult and they have to run their life. They've got to turn off the lights. They've got to get up. They've got to make themselves breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They don't sit in their bed waiting for it to come in. And so going outside, just walking up to their letterbox, like things like that. And I'm talking to a client today, with a 97-year-old father-in-law, but because the mother-in-law had just been put in hospital, that they're really worried about him because he's 97 at home. So instantly they've got to get some roster system around him to make sure he's okay, because he's used to having his wife with him doing the chores, some chores. So it's all management as they get older, and unfortunately in busy lifestyles, a lot of the children or family don't have the time. So that's the sad bit, which I do see.
What you mentioned earlier, it does happen a lot where there's a couple and then one of them gets to a point where maybe they're in hospital. In fact, I know one at the moment where one of them's gone into hospital. So the other one's at home. It's actually a bit of a break for her because he needs extra care anyway. But it is worrying, but it's when it's the opposite. And then I have another friend, opposite scenario, where the more capable one is now in hospital. I think maybe it was a hip. I'm not sure, sometimes they fall and they hurt their hip. And now the one that's not quite as able is suddenly at home by himself, which is not usual. And so the family has to wrap around. What are some things that we can look out for as, and not that we're caregivers, but as the members of the family, what are some things that we can do to make sure that they are still able to stay in their home, but safe to do so? Because like you said, there's a lot of things to do. Make sure we don't leave a pot on the oven and make sure we turn off the lights and everything.
That is the big one. The biggest thing is they forget to turn things off. So leaving them at that age to do their cooking is probably not a good idea. Now, I'm struggling in my mind just to remember there's a meal service that the family can ring, and I think it's done on a volunteer basis, because one of my friends does it, where if the elderly suddenly got sick or partner from hospital, they can ring and they get their meal, two meals a day dropped off free. And it's done.
Is it Meals on Wheels or something else?
It's something like that.
Okay.
It may have a different name for the elderly, but it could be that. It could be Meals on Wheels. But you can ring them for support straight away. If the family aren't around, because often the family are down country or even Australia, you've got to have an immediate solution of, okay, what do we do now? You need to be able to send someone in, check the environment, look at everything that's plugged in, and then write down, like my 92-year-old has a list in front of the fridge, a list in front of the bathroom, the things he has to do every morning, things that he needs to check. And so they do very good if they can read very clearly, what do I have to do, instead of trying to remember what they have to do. So you assist them because you don't want to trigger them. So triggering can be really anxious for them if they've got a mental decline. So you want everything to still be flowery and rosy, like you're going to do fine. But you do need a check-in. And I'm sure there's a nursing situation where they can come in and check whether they've bathed themselves. But again, if there's family around, this is the stuff they've got to think of. It's who's going to go around? I know one family right now taking a mother out of hospital, and they did take a daily roster of who's going around to make sure she's eaten clean and put her to bed. And before they do that, there's always a game or a photo album or throwing a ball or just even doing things where you have to hit lights, which is what they do in training with All Black to keep their mind alert. They've got to keep lights, touching lights and juggling balls. There's no difference to the elderly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if they drop it or get it wrong. You have to keep telling it doesn't matter. We're just having fun, keeping your brain alive. And when I find the elderly that have no one doing that, they just lose all their desire to use their brain. They go, my brain's tired. My brain doesn't want to. And it's like anything. It's like if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. So I insist, like I take in magazines to my clients because they don't want the crossword puzzle book. They want the magazine with all the pretty pictures. Mm-hmm. Then we do the crosswords and the Sudoku and all that. But in the rest home, which I'm in at the moment, they keep stealing each other's magazines. So I have a real problem at the moment because they're like little children stealing each other's toys.
Well, the magazines, I mean, that's a really simple one. You know, I'm sure that op shops sell magazines. I think I had a I went to a vision board workshop a few years back, and my friend moved to Australia, and she's like, do you want all these magazines? And I was like, yeah, that would be great. So I'm sure that's interesting. So I'm sure people could find magazines. And I love how you pointed out that it's not just the crosswords, because when we think elderly, we think crosswords, although I have to say, I also love a good crossword myself. Yes. But something more bright and colorful and more visually stimulating is also helpful.
Do you know what I found when I used to take in Mind Body the magazines, which each page would be like, how do you feel today? What are your goals? What are you grateful for? And my client got really annoyed. And I don't want to do that stuff. And then I bought in a magazine. And she goes, oh, there's Harry. I wonder what Harry's up to. Oh, Brad Pitt. Oh, he's a bit of a good looker. And I just noticed a complete different brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to make me do something instead of. And then I go, well, Harry, no, it's about Brad Pitt, about his children and their death. Oh, what did he do wrong? Like, well, you have to read that then. Would you like, yeah, wear my glasses? Mm-hmm. Instantly, you're stimulating their brain and you've already stimulated them to remember. It's normally short-term memory, not this long-term memory initially. And so I was really, really impressed. And then when I started crossword, my client would get really angry with me, like, no, can't do it, my brain's not working. And then she'd get one right. And then she'd whack me and say, oh, I thought you'd be better than me. I said, not necessarily. And then the next three she got. And I said, look, your brain's coming awake now. And she really, it became a competition.
Yeah.
So you're stimulating them in completely different ways.
Yeah.
The writing with the eye-hand-brain coordination, like she would instantly say, you do it. My hand's sore. So then I pass her a little all-black ball. I go, well, get your hand working. And they squeeze your hand 10 times. Now hold the pen. And then she goes, why can't you just do it? And I said, because my hand and my brain's not stopping working. Yours is. So do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she would write really badly. And I go, I can't read that. Do it better. Just like a five-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so bossy. I wish I could put a cork in your mouth. And I go, great. I'm loving that you're angry with me. It's an emotion.
So do you find that, because obviously, like all people, right, we have different personalities, we learn in different ways, we are motivated by different things. So what I'm hearing from that small example is she's motivated by competition.
Yeah.
And imagine if you found a crossword that was like a Hollywood type theme, she'd be all over it.
Yes. Well, there's some crosswords about countries or politics. And she looks at me and she goes, do you follow that? And I go, I don't. And she goes, let's cheat. Then she'd got to remember the page to go to cheat.
Yeah.
And she'll get frustrated. And I go, come on, put something in there so you know where to go back. And then she went to chuck it away. And I went, don't be so silly just because you can't find the page. And like, take a breath. And that's another thing. They don't breathe. They hold their breath when they're anxious.
Right.
They trigger a lot of things in them. So I always say, oi, put it down, take a breath. And I said, I have a problem finding the answer too. I said, let's put something in and then we can easily cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And then right on top of the crossword, Sandy and da-da-da did this crossword and we cheated a lot.
She loved that.
Date on it. Because often she'll say to me, I did all those crosswords. And I go, don't think you did. I did. And I go, open them up. Look, she goes, oh, you put your name on it. But all of this is really good for their brain.
Yeah.
We shouldn't pander to them. We need to make them do things. We need to make them remember. Or just like I said, wear your glasses. And then, oh, I think I need new glasses. Can you just read it? Go, no, you read it. So if we keep saying that we're going to do stuff for them, then they can't stimulate their own brain, their own emotions. Their emotions just go flat.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is So not falling into the trap of enabling them when they're like, oh, you just write for me or you do it. That's really helpful. You also mentioned photographs, and that reminded me, we have a guy who's nonverbal, and I can't remember what he's got, but we sometimes bring out the postcards. We have this big container, like this tub of, I think it's like an ice cream container full of postcards. And he really enjoys like looking at the photos, you know, the different pictures. And then we talk about like what country that is. So that's another way to do it. So stimulating the brain with different visuals. Yeah.
Absolutely.
What do you do with the photos? Do you ask them, like, because obviously the photos belong to that person. So you get them to tell you stories about it?
Yeah, like normally they're select about the photos they even want to look at,
right.
I find. So she has two, and sometimes I always check, like, who is that? Is that your husband? Is that your, is that when you got married? Is that your dad? And then I go, so where did you live with your husband? What was the address? And she gets, sometimes it's like, oh, my brain's not working. I go, well, make it work. And then bang, away, she just wakes up and tells me everything, even the home phone number. And
wow.
All that stuff is so good. But the photos bring back beautiful memories, like for many, well, we hope they do. So that's really important that we're always looking at these beautiful ways of stimulating them with photos. I notice a lot of people bring in photo albums, but the photo albums have to be around stimulating their good memories, not your good memories.
Right.
Their good times, the things that they remember. Like, and you don't want to keep triggering the fact that they're not remembering, because that will just trigger them to get angry. They can get quite aggressive, depending on what drugs they're on. I mean, of course, what drugs they're on have a lot to do with all of this as well.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And then I've got a few other things I wanted to ask you about around the essentials to thrive rather than survive.
Right.
So, like you said, that they grew up in an era where you go to the doctor and, you know, usually they give us them a prescription. They still do that, obviously, unless they have children or people in their life that are a little bit more holistic. So are there certain, like, is there some good education and awareness about contraindications of drugs, medication, side effects, and or addictions that might also come into it?
All of the above, Natalie. All of the above. Let's just take one drug, which I think every single person in a rest home is given, laxatives. And they're overused, and they're used morning and night without even really realizing if they are able to poop, because they don't remember if they poop. A lot of them, they don't remember whether they've even eaten lunch or dinner.
Right.
And so then when you're asking them, have you pooped today? Like, my one just goes, nope. And I go, but you have, because when I came in, I could smell it. She goes, nope. So I've actually put up a poo chart Monday to Saturday with a pen and say, write a pee if you poo, and put it right in front of the toilet. So laxatives are overused. Now, understanding laxatives don't fix the problem. Laxatives release some muscle so everything can flop out.
Right.
But then after a period of time, every muscle down that area starts to release.
Right.
But then creating a full-time nappies, pooing when they've got no control, which, again, upsets them a lot. The laxatives are a huge one. And I find...
Are they just given as a default? I mean, who decides?
Yes.
I'm confused.
Yes, they're just given as a default. When there's you can do a use it, like I use a NeoClean, which is a herbal stimulant to get the colon working from behind, but not relaxing the muscles. It's actually moving the muscles.
Yeah.
So, no, it's given as a default. And if you look up again, serious, serious side effects, and they're actually not meant to be used for over 4 months in a row.
Yeah.
Like, it's written on them, but it is ignored in the elderly. So for me, it's like, well, okay, so if you have a problem with them pooing, and of course we don't want their colon backed up and their bowel backed up, then why aren't you getting them up, like, every single day, have a staff member take them for a walk around the rest home, whether it be whatever it's in, or get them to stand up, get some movement into them. And like in this particular rest home, it's not everyone. The last one they gave a jug of water to, but this one, there is zero water. They're never given water. They're given coffee, tea, or juice. Mm-hmm. They're never given water. There's no water in their room. And water is the number one that they need for their colon, bowel, and kidneys to work. And movement is number two. So if we're not getting those two activities happening, water, I mean, I just can't understand why water isn't given. And also for the price that people pay, if you can remember to give them sleeping pills and opioids and laxatives, why can't they also be given, every single one of them, every day, a probiotic?
I was thinking, or a vitamin.
Yeah. So probiotics to help the gut health, to help the colon health to work better. Even vitamin D. So a lot of them don't want to go out. Well, they can't get outside. So when the sun is shining, go park them in the sun. Mm-hmm. Talking of which, go park them in the sun so they can get some vitamin D. And that also helps with their cholesterol level. So a lot of people don't realize that you have the HDL and LDL. And the HDL, when you've got sun on your skin, turns it into vitamin D, which helps the absorption of nutrients from food and helps you use your cholesterol. And so those things, like, imagine if they could have some vitamin D drops with K3, a probiotic, and a jug of water that has to be empty every day. What if that was just standard?
It sounds so basic. I can't stand it.
And anything but nothing, they are not absorbing enough. They don't want to eat much, so they've got to get some extra nutrients, then extra antioxidants, extra digestive health. Like, I will just put some squeezes of licorice root into the water, comes and taste it. Kiwi fruit for breakfast, gold kiwi fruit, gets the cells moving. If nothing, two or three gold kiwi fruit, like if elderly are listening or kids are listening, start giving them their fiber, get them to move. And even, it doesn't matter if they say don't want to have water, make them have water. I don't care what you do, put pretty things in it, put balloons on the edge, do whatever you need to do. Squeeze lemons, oranges, put mint in, lots of them love mint.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, like, I've got a jug in here full of lemon, cucumber, and mint. And I really love that. And I'll just put it into a jug and take it in. It's like a, for them, it's like an alcoholic drink.
Yeah. I feel like there's a business opportunity. Like, imagine if they had a retirement home that was focused on holistic health care for the elderly, where these things were a matter of course, like daily probiotic, daily vitamin D plus K, like you mentioned, and filtered water, ideally with some lovely cucumber and mint. I mean, these, it sounds so doable to me. It's so baffling that the go-to is just medication on top of medication, which creates more problems. But then again, I'm biased.
No, this is 100%. And even if you look at each medication they're given, there's always, if you go and look anywhere, it always says take with large glass of water. I've watched personally nurses or staff give pills. And they don't care. So either just leave them with the pills or they'll pass the pill and an elderly will do the tiniest little sip. Where they should be given a big glass of water and they should stay there to know that whole water needs to be gone with your medication. Because without that water, they become toxic, stuck, and cause the constipation.
Mm.
So even though it's the nursing and GP world of trying to help the elderly, they're causing way more issues. Laziness, time, I don't know. But what I see is the normal things are not happening. Like, even what I do with giving these little balls, tiny, I've got about 50 of them, you put them in their hands and you make them just squeeze those balls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you just get their fingers and hands working, even opening and closing their mouth, because often they can't get food in because they haven't used the muscles in their mouth because there's no one to talk to because no one can talk to them.
Wow. Like,
so then they're dribbling and then it's just a downhill decline. And a lot of we think of elderly being aggressive and dementia, but that has to happen 10 to 15 years before. So you don't just wake up one day and have dementia or Alzheimer's. You've been driving your vehicle, your brain towards that for 10 to 15 years. So I tell people now in their mid-50s, 60s, and I tell them when I see what they're taking, I go, you will have dementia at early 70s. There's no way you're going to escape it. If you refuse to drink the water, you are living off 7 medications so that you can't feel pain because you're too lazy to do the basic things you need to do. Sleep well, breathe well, hydrate well, and eat well. I mean, they're not prepared to do it. So they create an inflamed gut, which then creates an inflamed brain, and anything that remains inflamed will break down over time, and that's where dementia and Alzheimer's It's mainly coming from, and a lot of the drugs they put on in these 60s. I had a woman of 66 brought to me, and I was like absolutely horrified. I said, why are you taking this pill, this pill, this pill? She goes, I don't remember. I go, okay. How long have you been taking it? I don't know, about 4 years. I go, but you tell me that you're falling over. She goes, yeah, everything just gives out. And I went, but you can't feel anything, can you? You've got no pain. She goes, none. I go, that's why it's collapsing, because you can't feel the pain to tell you what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do the doctors say? Oh, he gave me some more. I'm on Tramadol, but now I've been given some codeine, and I'm on gabapentin, and I'm taking sleeping pills, and I can't feel my left arm. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, has anyone put you in an MRI to have a look at your spine? Nope. And then I said, do you drink? Remember Tramadol, codeine? Mm-hmm. And this person said, yes, I do. And I go, what do you drink? A glass of wine? No, I can get through a bottle of whiskey in 4 days. And I was just like, the medical world are just giving you more drugs, but not asking you whether you're drinking water, and not reminding you that you can't drink alcohol on this huge cocktail of medication. Now, this person, she'll be lucky to make 80, but she'll definitely lose her mind in her 70s. There's no way she can't avoid it on that cocktail. So that's where I get really upset, mm-hmm. because I've got to battle through someone at this stage going, but I like it. I like that I'm not in pain. I like that I feel this. And because they somehow believe that they're better, but they're not better. They're just drugs, so they can't feel anything. But nothing's getting better. Everything's getting worse.
I feel like with that, it's like it's a disconnection. They're disconnected to their body because everything's numbed and dumbed down and masked. But then also the personality effects of that, right? The mental health effects. And therefore, I imagine the fallout is also slightly more disconnected from the caregivers and their family because their behavior shifts and changes.
Yes. Yeah. The behavior does become really, really erratic. Like, and it can change from day to day, depending on what food they've been given, whether the sun's got on their skin, whether they've moved out of bed or just got attached to the TV. Because remember, what you hang out with, who you hang out with, you become. So if the elderly are around, declining elderly, they learn the behavior and go, well, why should I do anything? Because no one else is coming out of their room. So they practice the behavior. Then a couple of days of rainy weather, cold, miserable, no social interaction, no getting out, no laughter. They don't even like the way they are because they know they can't remember anything. Mm-hmm. And then it would be horrible not to remember whether you've just gone to toilet or whether you've had lunch or dinner, wouldn't it? And that's what they get like, and they get really aggressive with it. And it's really, really hard to untrigger that. But I have to just quickly change the subject or just do something to annoy them, like I bang a drawer and like, what are you doing? I go, bang in the drawer, see if you can hear me. Mm-hmm. Of course I can hear, and you just distract them out of the anger of what they're feeling because they don't like the way they're feeling. But yeah, the depression and the irritable behavior, I mean, some of them are really, really aggressive, but I would be probably horrified to see if they're still here in 1 or 2 years, if they're on such huge medication. They don't even know who they are. And the families, I notice a lot of those people, families stop coming in. Mm-hmm. And that's like taking in young children is like an animal. Taking in children and animals is just so rewarding for them.
Yeah.
So this week I took in my 15-year-old grandson. And my client just went, who's that? And I said, you already know who he is. And she was like, I do not. I've never seen him. I know he's handsome. I don't think. And then she went, oh, that's your grandson. Like, and she goes, see, you think I'm stupid, but I'm not stupid. And then the whole time she was playing with him. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd tell her to do something. I turn my back, she'd pull faces or poke her tongue out with my grandson. And she was having a fun time doing it, being like a naughty little girl with me. And we all ended up just laughing. And I just started chucking up, like, you've been so naughty today. And she was like chucking it back at me. And we were just in hysterics instead of her in tears. And that's my main goal, is to get them laughing.
Yeah. But the sad thing is, Sandy, that, I mean, it would be great if every elderly person could have someone like you to come in and banter with them, you know, that type of thing. But a lot of them don't. And I really think this whole concept of like a holistic health, or even one floor on of a particular residence, yeah, where people can allocate, they go, yeah, I want my mom to be on the holistic health floor. And on that floor, maybe they also have people come in and do music. Like I did music with my people last week, and they helped me choose some songs on the Spotify playlist, and they all start singing, you know, when Waltzing Matilda comes on, or yeah, we had do the twist, you know, and go like this, and they're all like singing, and we're doing chair exercises, so we're still sitting down. Well, no, we actually did stand up and do some twisting, but they just said to me, oh, you're like a breath of fresh air, thank you so much for doing the music. And I feel like we, as the rest of the community, we can up our game, can't we, to support them and make their last few years more vibrant.
Absolutely. But how hard is it? It's just like, whether you're in rest home or at home, there is no excuse not to drink water. Your body needs it. Every organ in your body needs it. Mm-hmm. It's the God-given right for their gut not to hurt, their bowel not to hurt. Give them probiotic. If you're going to give them, like, when you get an antibiotic at your GP at any age, when you go to a chemist, the good chemist will always say, we recommend you take probiotic with this. So why do we not recommend that for the elderly when their health is already destroyed? Why do they not deserve that? And so I have this huge why of, and why don't they deserve fresh salads and colourful vegetables? Why don't they deserve that anymore? Like, and you see, when I see any elderly, like my healthiest elderly are the ones that go boating. Like boaters, the ocean, and they go yachting and boating. Family, friends, family, healthiest people, wine, sunshine, ocean, fresh air, breathing, happiness, all of those beautiful things. So, and their cognition in their 90s is spot on because of the vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
And also, most of those ones still grow their own vegetables. Do composting and worms. I had a client yesterday in my place. I said, how do you do the worms? And he went into great detail. He's in his 70s to tell me, why don't you come and help me? Okay. And so he's going to come and help me do worming and composting, because that's not my thing, but it keeps him alive.
Yeah.
Because I'm putting bees as well. And then I said to him, don't even stop. Don't ever stop. Like, just never stop doing what you're doing, because your cognition is better than half my 50-year-olds. Like, just from what you're doing. Breathing. Like, imagine in rest homes if you could just teach them one hand on their chest, one hand on their belly, and teach them to breathe and push their hands away, and then, like, pretend they're blowing out a balloon. Like, imagine if we could just sit with them and do that every day, to help them breathe, because a lot of them just don't breathe properly, and that's their blood pressure up, that's their heart, that's their anxiety, that's their sleeping. So just even things like that, or they're having calm music at night time to sleep with. Just there's some beautiful things that we could do for them that just been ignored, and it completely does my head in. Like, I did notice at the rest home I was at yesterday, there was all these forms left in them for my client to answer. And she'd gone through and got very satisfied. And I'm like, why have you said that you like the assortment of vegetables, you like the food, it's never cold? Why did you? She said, I don't know. I don't even know if I've eaten. Never mind whether it's good or bad, but I just ticked the whole column. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't be giving forms to them, because most of them are unable to even answer them.
Mm. So, but imagine if instead of a form, they were asked, which maybe they are, in some places, you know, what do you love? What could we do better? Like, but in a dialogue sense, not just a form, perhaps, that might be more. So for people that are listening, so I'm sure that a lot of our listeners can resonate because they will have elderly members of their family, either in a rest home or at home and struggling. Some of them will be thriving, which is amazing. But what I'd love people that are listening to do is if you can just take one or two things away from this conversation today, something that you think you might be able to integrate into the lifestyle of your loved one, whether it be that you do some breathing alongside them, don't just tell them to breathe better, but, you know, sit with them, maybe do some breathing. Or if you think, oh, that there's no way they're going to do that, maybe you take in some postcards like we talked about, or some photos that will bring back their positive memories, not just everything they've missed out on or can't remember. Or maybe the concept that Sandy mentioned of a daily roster, whether it's for their toileting habits or it's for remembering to turn off the lights and to do a tick list of things to remember before they go to bed. We would love to hear your thoughts. We would also love to hear your experiences around the elderly care, thriving or surviving. You can send us a text, 2057. You can send us an email, inbox@realitycheck.radio. Sandy, anything else around essentials to thrive rather than just survive before I move on?
Just remembering those essentials of water has to be part of their life. The breathing, the movement, like they have to move. Everyone's going to be sore when you age, as you age. So as soon as you move, I always tell all my clients, elderly, wriggling is your friend now. Mm. Get up and wriggle. Dance, wriggle, 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 and like just wave everything around, open and close, wriggle.
Yeah.
And like just having those elements of movement, hydration, and breathing, and teaching them how to do it and doing it with them and having some fun with them. Like taking them outside in the sunshine, getting their skin exposed, taking them to an ocean, getting them an ice cream, like just have fun with them.
I think it's probably similar also to remember when you've got young babies and let's say you're going to the beach and you want to park as close as possible because it's just tricky with like a double stroller and a scooter or a baby in a backpack. And I imagine as people get more elderly, some of them, it is harder, like they might have a walking frame. So it's hard. So you do want to try to get, you know, if you're going to take them to the beach, right, you want to have that access. You want to make sure they're going to be safe and not fall. But is there a fine line, right, between keeping them safe and not falling versus still allowing them to live and encouraging them to have new experiences, not just talk about old ones?
Well, you have to think about where the tide is, can they walk, what's the terrain, like if it's a Zimmer frame, like my lady has a Zimmer frame, I always have to look at the tigers are, or I sit her on the fence, I take her, and always her safety is always paramount. And encouraging her, but she'll never hurt herself. Because after a while, they become scared. They become scared of even getting out of bed to go to the toilet because most of the falls in the rest time happen from that, getting out of bed to go to the toilet.
Right.
And then they have to crawl, drag themselves, or yell to get the buzz up. But that is the time when their blood pressure goes down, they haven't eaten properly, they are not breathing properly, and they can just get up to go to the toilet. And that is that. That's when they hit themselves or hurt themselves.
Mm.
So you do have to think about the environment, and that's what you've got to think about when you're in bed as well at home. Make sure everything is nothing sharp around them. Everything is cushioned. You've got to and practice it with them. Practice it. But yeah, the beach. I mean, everyone, just common sense. Don't take them to a rocky beach if they are a bit unsteady. Make sure it's hard sand, not soft sand.
Yeah. I guess I was picturing my local beach, which is Mission Bay or Coey, where there's a beautiful paved path. Like you're quite close to the sand, but they don't necessarily need to go onto the sand. There's like a lot of benches they could sit on and still have the experience, but not be in a perilous situation.
Yes. And don't be scared of it. Like a lot of people are scared of, it's going to be too much hard work. Well, I'm sorry. If you're a child, your parents did a lot of hard work for you. Like that one really upsets me. Is that too hard to take them somewhere? No. I had some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful clients that are hating to think I'm talking about them if they listen. I have some people that I think you are unbelievable kids the way you're looking after your parents. Unbelievable what you're doing. Like the roster system, the joy you're giving them, the things they do in the room, changing pictures around, putting up new photos, like changing their environment around them and changing flowers or putting a little flower garden out somewhere for them to look after, or little herb gardens, like doing things like that, give them chores to do.
Yeah, it's what I'm just feeling from this is there's so many little things. It's the little things that actually make a difference, and you don't have to do them all. That's why I was saying if people just take one or two things from this conversation, and even it might not be someone that listens that does it. It just might be someone that's listening today thinks, oh my goodness, my best friend is really struggling, you know, with her mother at the moment in this elderly care situation. And then they might pass on some of the wisdom that you've shared today. So that's what I'm hoping for. Just take the wisdom, pass it on to whoever can benefit so that we can help the elderly thrive, not just survive. So before I get to the Up Your Brave question, I wanted to talk about decline, because some people will notice the elderly ones in their life declining. Like every time they see them, they're like, oh my goodness, they look so much thinner, or oh my goodness, they look so frail. What are some things that we can do to slow that decline down? You probably mentioned a lot of them, but if there's anything else that we can do as loved ones.
So go back to the basics, right? Go back to the basics of, are they breathing? I mean, I taught my 92-year-old, his blood pressure was up and he was on blood pressure medication, and his son said, oh, I'll take him back to the doctor. I said, no, sit him down. And I said to him, I need you to take some deep breaths. And I did his blood pressure. I got a bit high. Okay, we're going to do that better. Let's do it together. And then I smiled at him and he smiled back. So he settled down. And then he did a better reading. And then I did a third one. And on the third one, he was just about basically down to normal again. I said, what did you learn? And his son and him learned, I can bring my own blood pressure down just by breathing. Yeah. I don't need to go up my medications. And I said, same goes with a lot of kidney, liver problems. You need to up your hydration and stop having sugar drinks, coffee, and tea. Mm-hmm. They are diuretic and you're getting dehydrated, which is causing your dizzy spells, your lack of cognition, your headaches, your sore body, lack of movement. And the way we allow them to sit and lie down, check the way they sleep. Like they need to have all of their spine in alignment when they sit. You need to prop them up. You need to teach them to use their body, pull their shoulders back, pop their head back, like, and do the exercises to maintain as much as we can spinal alignment. So there is so much we can do, but it's just, they seem to be put into this bracket of they're not worth doing anything for anymore. Let's just medicate them so they don't complain.
Yeah.
That's not helping them. That's not how our elderly should die.
If you missed Sandy's first interview, I will put the link on the replay page, or you can just go to the app and type in Sandy Leo, S-A-N-D-Y space L-E-O. Last time we talked about, I think it was elderly care homes and what a kind of drastic situation some of them are in. So people can learn more if they want to listen to that. And there's so much that can be done. I feel like it's a positive future. What baffles me is I know it's expensive to put your parent in a home like that. Like the dollars are large, you know, if they want to buy an apartment within a retirement complex village, like it's high prices. Why are they not better taken care of?
It seems to me that the 7,000, around about 7,000, you'll be lucky to get more than macaroni and a mince pie in a day. You, like, this rest time doesn't even give towels. I've taken in the towels. Sheets, I've taken in the sheets. That's, so if you're at the lower end, which we wouldn't call low, $6,000 or $7,000 a month.
But no, we would not. That sounds so.
They're paying that just for a room, right, with a rusty toilet, rusty shower, absolutely nothing. There's nothing given. There's no care. There's no one going in and doing anything for them. They're basically self-surviving, told to go to breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or brought to them in bed. The rooms are so average. It's not funny. Like I said, the toilets are rusty. frames are roughly the shower's rusty. The one before wasn't rusty, but was similar pricing. At least they had water jugs, which, and they insisted on water. I talked to other people and gone into other ones, which are more around 12,000, and they do have more care, and you can ask for more to be done, and they get fresh sheets and fresh towels, but that is not a given in a rec fund around $7,000. You don't get fresh linen, fresh sheets, nothing. I take them home.
Is the family expected to come in and change the sheets and everything?
No, I think there's not enough people like me checking.
Right.
Because they say, oh, no, we do. I said, no, you don't, because I put them on and I put a mark on it and you haven't washed them and it's been on for over a month.
Yeah.
Pillow slip was brown and so I just rocked pillow slips now.
Yeah.
Because I won't, it's a God-given right to have a clean pillow slip and clean sheets. And towels just go missing, even if I write their name on it. They give to other people because they don't have enough to go around.
Well, hopefully people are inspired to give a bit of love to someone in their life that is either elderly or works with the elderly this week. I know that a lot of them are stretched, of course, as well. It is my hope that they will move towards, the whole system will move towards more holistic approach to care and well-being, not just a medicated approach. Sandy, yeah. Before we go, I'd love to ask you, if you were to truly up your brave for the rest of 2024, what would you do?
I would find whoever's in charge of the government regulations of rest homes and work really hard to make some of the things I talked about absolutely compulsory. Things like they have to have their water monitored a day, they have to have a probiotic and vitamin D if they're not going outside. They do have to have a standard towel, linen changing, and their food has to be, it should be based on what medication they're taking for what. So there needs to be more government regulation instead of this. No, what I see is not hardly any regulation at all.
Well, if anyone listening has contact details or information around rest home regulation or anything we can do, or even if there's, I don't know if there's any grants out there, but it would be so great if to get you to head into more rest homes to help people. I know that I'm very excited. I've invited you to come in and lead a fitness session for my people. So I'm excited about that.
I'm great to do that.
Amazing. Sandy, what else is coming up for you in the coming weeks and months, and how can people connect and learn more?
Okay, well, you'll find me on all channels, on LinkedIn, Sandy Leo, on YouTube, Sandy Leo 2, and Instagram, Sandy Pilates Rehab. But putting in Sandy Leo, you'll find me. I have two Facebook accounts, Sandy Leo or sandyleo.com. But if you want to find anything, you just go onto my website. I've got a new website since last time, www.sandyleo.com. And if you're interested in any assistance in rest homes or private, there is a link in there for aged care, for either group or one-on-one session. So that is in there. And then if it's for you because you don't want to age incorrectly and you want to get that sorted now, I can do a basic program. Again, that's in there because if we look at what you're thinking, eating, breathing, hydrating, medicating, now we can prevent so much happening later.
I think that's such a good point as well. It's right. In terms of decline, how can we slow our own decline? How can we age more gracefully? Yes.
The answer is now, and I have a recipe for every single person. I've never ever had anyone not say to me, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't found you earlier.
Yeah. Well, they found you now. We're happy to shine the light on you, Sandy, and also on this topic, which I think is something close to my heart, but I know it's something that a lot of people are living with every day. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners before we go?
Basically, I just want to say it is not a rest home or a doctor place to look after your parents, the elderly, nor to look after you. Our body, if we fuel it with everything it needs in every hole, eyes, ears, nose, throat, and if we feed it right, our body can heal from absolutely anything or prevent it. And it's just a recipe for each person and figuring out that recipe. If you're slightly gone downhill. It's like a way to get you out of there. If you're heading to Asia, you're getting worried, things prevent it happening. Your body, your vehicle, if you run it properly, will work for you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sandy, for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Natalie.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.